This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon, TSN1290.ca. Good afternoon, universe. And welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside colleague Richard Pollock. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon. A jam-packed program where we will take you to Pittsburgh. We will take you to Montreal. We will take you to New York. And we will take you to Minnesota. Guests from all four locations. Lots of Jets talk. A little bit of All-Star Game talk. Not a ton, because it's the All-Star Game, and frankly, who cares? But I think you agree with that statement to begin with, Richie?
Yeah, I'm not a big All-Star Game guy, but it's for the kids, so
yeah,
I don't mind that they have it. I just don't really, I don't point my attention to it.
No, it's great for the city of Columbus. Looks like they're having, I've seen some pictures. Aaron Portsline, our friend, has been tweeting out some pictures of the events and everything else that's going on. You know, they have the Fan Fest, and
They make it a whole big deal, and there's some sort of mascot competition, which, as long as you like mascots, I suppose you're okay with. Otherwise, you might be terribly frightened. Seems like they're having a lot of fun in Columbus, which is good to see for that hockey market, which has been they've been long time coming with this All-Star Game, of course.
Yes, of course.
I have in my possession, courtesy of our good friend Ali K, a 2011 NHL All-Star Game T-shirt from Columbus. The All-Star Game that never happened.
Right.
Because of the lockout and then the Olympics. So it's been a number of years in the making for the All-Star Game to finally make it back to Ohio. We start, of course, though, on this Saturday afternoon, like we always do, with the Winnipeg Jets entering the All-Star break last Wednesday with a solid 4-0 defeat of the Columbus Blue Jackets. And at the All-Star break, they have 60 points, good enough for a record of 26-14-8, firmly in the first wild card spot in the Western Conference, within striking distance, of course, of the leaders in the Central Division. In your wildest dreams, Richie, did you envision a Winnipeg Jets team with 60 points at this point of the season?
Nope, absolutely not. It's a pleasant surprise for all Jets fans. I did not expect this type of success for this team. And you have to be pleased, and I think the biggest thing you have to like is that it certainly to me doesn't seem like it's a aberration at all. This team is good. This team consistently comes out and if not takes it to the other team, it's certainly in every game. And there's a consistency there that certainly has not been there in the past, and doesn't appear to be any reason to expect the team to fade down the stretch. I mean, based on how they've played, I don't expect them to fade down the stretch. I think they're going to make the playoffs. And again, I didn't think that before, so I'm not going to pretend like I did.
Mm-hmm.
But based on what I've seen, they're going to make the playoffs. And I really don't think there's too much doubt that they are. Like, I look at the standings, I look at the other teams around. Obviously, LA has injuries now, and I told you I like Calgary, and I think Calgary's going to make the playoffs. San Jose and Vancouver don't inspire much confidence for me. So I think that the Jets are in here. And it's a matter of where they're going to finish here, not if they're going to finish in the playoffs. Because if you look at their, and you put that together in the notes before the show, 60 points, right? And so they need about, they need 95, 96 points.
Yeah.
Over the final, 38
games.
38 games.
Well, look, pardon me, 34 games. They played 48. They have 34 remaining. And I went back and I looked at the last few years. Didn't go that far back because there's different playoff formats now than there were. And last year, Dallas got into the second wild card spot with 91 points. But generally speaking, it's, if you're in at 95, 96 points over the last, 5-6 years, you've almost guaranteed yourself a playoff spot. So, 34 games remaining, and let's say the Jets need those 35 points. I mean, it's not a...
That's a point of game. In this day and age, it's very difficult to not do that.
Yeah.
If you look at the standings, I mean, look at the teams and what they have in terms of a point of game, because 500, you mentioned, 500 isn't really 500 anymore. And how many teams don't have a point per game? Like Dallas, who is sitting... Like Minnesota, who is way out of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like they're down, I've been saying that for a while now, and I think you agree, Drew, 46 points in 46 games. And we're writing them off. They're basically done.
Yeah.
Not basically, I think they are done. But the point is that they're at a point a game clip, which isn't good enough to make the playoffs. But that's basically what the Jets need to do to make the playoffs now. So they have to play really poorly to make the playoffs in a bottom seat, as far as I'm concerned. I don't think there should be too much concern. I don't think Jets fans And I don't think necessarily that they are waiting for that collapse. I think now you're focusing on what's to come.
There has been no evidence thus far that there's going to be a collapse by this team. They've gone, I think we talked about this on Wednesday's show, since the 1-4 record to start the season, they've gone at most 2 games without earning a point. And when you don't have any significant losing streaks, clean losing streaks, you're going to be a playoff team. It's pretty much that simple. As long as you're earning a point here and then, you know, 2 points, maybe you go, you know, 3 games without a clean win, but you get 2 points in those 3 games. And you do that, you know, every now and then, you're going to be right in the thick of things. And there's no evidence, like you said, there's absolutely no evidence this team is going to fall off. Now, of course, they could suffer more debilitating injuries, but it's hard to believe that they're going to get any more injured than they were when they were out without their pretty much their entire defense.
Now, what you look at, I think if you're changing your point of view and you're saying, okay, we as a team, we think we're going to make the playoffs. Now we're pointing our focus to Chicago, St. Louis, and Nashville, which I think they're probably already done, mm-hmm. which they have done, you can assume. That's tough, though, when you talk about passing those teams. Because, you know, Tomlin, we're having on later in the show, he notes in his book that there's a different level of play. It's true after the All-Star break. I mean, the teams, the good teams really get ramped up and get going here. And so, again, we talked about the standings, but they're behind Chicago, St. Louis, of course, Nashville. All those teams have at least 1 game. In Nashville's case, 3 games, and in St. Louis's case, 2 games in hand. Now, they play St. Louis 4 times coming down here. Mm-hmm. So there's an opportunity to gain some ground. There's also an opportunity to lose some ground. So that's going to be an issue in terms of who you're playing in the first round, and it looks like Anaheim is almost assured a spot as the number one seed in the Pacific. I mean, nobody's going to catch them there.
No, they're 12 in the Pacific Division. They're 12 points up on San Jose, and Anaheim has a game in hand. So you're right. They've won the Pacific. They're going to be the they're going to either play the first wild card team or the second wild card team.
So that's when you're talking about the Jets, you know, trying to get into position. Are they going to be playing? Are they going to be in the 2-3 game? Or are they going to be playing against that one seed who we don't know who that's going to be yet? Right. And then or Anaheim. So that depends. But that's what I think the focus needs to be. I mean, the team is just consistently putting out a great effort. And, you know, Paul Maurice was a focus of a real good feature by Eric DeHatchick.
I read that.
Regular on our show in the Globe and Mail. And talking
that's in
about
today's Globe and Mail.
Yeah, in the Globe and Mail today. And talking about One of the things that Brian Engblom, who obviously works for TSN TV and does the color commentary with Dennis Bayak, he was saying, and he has the opportunity, unlike basically everyone aside from Shane Heidi, to stand between the benches for the games when he's broadcasting the games. And he said it's been a marked difference in the communication on the bench than there was last year. I think that's important. I mean, there's so many factors here that have contributed to the success, this unexpected success. To a point, you know, to a level also for the actual Jets themselves. I mean, some of this has kind of happened. Some of them has been great decisions. You know, the Perreault's turned out to be a great move, right? Matthew Perreault. But, I mean, Dustin Byfuglien moves back to defense. I mean, there aren't any injuries. Yeah. That never happens. Maybe he gets dealt. You don't know. So some of this is fortuitous, but hey, that's the way it works. A lot of the game is unplanned, and you kind of happen into it.
You roll with the punches. I mean, you're right about it. Dustin Byfuglien moving to the back end being fortuitous, but I mean, at the same time, if you said you never would have said, you know, the reason you have to move him back is because you've lost your top four defensemen at the time. And
right, but I'm saying now in terms of it's completely changed the outlook of your franchise, really.
Yeah.
Now there's decisions to be made, and we've spoken about those, and we'll speak about those, you know, later on throughout the course of the next few weeks, months, and all that stuff.
Sure.
But it's a good thing. I think, you know, also on the Byfuglien thing, just talking about this and thinking about this coming into the show, that happened because of the injuries, but it also happened on Paul Maurice's watch and based on his decision. And I mean that in the way that Dustin Byfuglien, maybe before with Claude Noel, whoever it may be, was going to do what he was going to do no matter what. Now, man, people forget that actually Claude Noel moved him up and to forward right before he got fired. And Paul Maurice kept
that game
up
in Montreal where he moved him up halfway through the game.
And, you know, people say, oh, you know, I always thought he should be a defenseman and look at what he's done. That's fine. You're certainly, people have been consistent in saying that and they're entitled to their opinions. But you are assuming that had he stayed on defense all the time, he would have played the same way he is now. But I think because he played forward, because he did not like playing forward, because he has an opportunity here to prove himself, because he knows what it was like to not be able to play defense, because he knows he has a contract coming up, because, you know, so many reasons here have contributed to his success. Maybe that wouldn't have happened otherwise. And Paul Maurice putting him back there on his watch, not Dustin Byfuglien calling the shots, mm-hmm. I think is also a factor in not only their relationship and the success that they've both had, But I think also in the locker room, that's Paul Maurice's show, and he runs the show, and it's happened on his watch. So I think those are all factors. I mean, this is it's a little bit complex in that regard. But overall, this team has had really strong success, and now the point of focus, what we're going to be discussing later on the show, is who can they possibly add?
Sure.
It's amazing to think about that, as opposed to who can they trade to you know, net some picks or youngsters going forward.
Sure, because most people probably would have thought that the struggles were going to continue, and then you're talking about, do you start to consider trading one of your players who's not necessarily an unrestricted free agent this season, but next season, the Andrew Ladds, the Dustin Byfuglien, etc.
Now, there are decisions to be made, Drew, and that is, what do you do with Dustin Byfuglien? Do you sign him to a big money, or do you trade him, or do you trade somebody else? And we will talk about that. What do you do with Andrew Ladd, and what is there to do with Hutchinson when he's up after next year, and,
right,
and Trouba and Scheifele? So,
but at the beginning,
we're going to see what Kevin Cheveldayoff is all about,
yeah,
coming up, more so than we have to date. But
and at the beginning of the season, we thought we would be having those conversations now.
Yes,
because we thought the team would have fallen out of a playoff spot, or would be struggling to make the playoffs.
Would not be even if they were trying to make the playoffs, wouldn't be in a position to acquire talent with less of a percentage chance of making it.
Whereas right now they are the 10th overall team in the entire,
yes,
National Hockey League. So those are questions that are still going to be relevant, and we're still going to discuss them. But they've sort of been kicked down the road a little bit right now because of how well this team is performing, and you worry about the future, or you maybe discuss the future, but you're more concerned with the here and now and the concept of adding to what has been a tremendous performance by the Jets roster thus far this season. You look at their schedule, and I broke this down a little bit prior to the show. I went through it, and I said there's 34 games remaining for this Winnipeg Jets team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there was a lot of talk before, you know, that the Jets' schedule really does get harder. And it does, to a certain degree. They certainly play the St. Louis Blues four times, and there's a difficult element upcoming for the Jets team. But of their 34 games, and this is a testament to how well they've played,
mm-hmm,
19 of those 34 games are against teams that are currently below them in the standings. Only 15 games, so it's not only, it's, you know, 15 games of those 34 are against teams that are currently above them. So you got the four against St. Louis,
the
two against Chicago.
That would sort of those, because if you are continue to be a really good team and you maybe move your way up to 10th in the league, that those teams that are more points than you are top 10 teams, not if you're 20th overall in the league, and the teams that are better to you are in the top 20 teams.
Of course.
Big difference there.
I mean, it certainly is. But I mean, for the most part, you thought, I mean, to say that the Winnipeg Jets here at the All-Star break, having played 48 games, are the 10th overall team in the NHL is astounding. And
yeah, I mean, nobody expected this.
No.
Again, credit to everybody involved there. I just would like to see the person. Now, Hustler predicted them to make the playoffs. So,
yeah, he gets all the marks.
So he gets the marks, but I don't know anybody else who did.
Yeah, I don't know anybody else who did either. So Hustler does get all the credit from us, and he's been that's just always the way it's going to be, because he was on the record from day one,
yep,
whereas we're admitting, you know,
oh no!
Honesty, you know, first and foremost. Here.
I'm just surprised, you know, Ezzy didn't take him, but because he takes him every year to make the playoffs. But that's the big thing. Is you know, who thought this would happen? And I think when you look at it from the team perspective as well, how does this change your decision making going forward? Even the Michael Frolik thing, which we'll talk about later as well. Their intention always was probably to sign him, but they had a safety guard in the sense that if they for sure couldn't sign him, they likely would trade him because if they weren't out of the playoffs, and that was probably part of the thought process.
Sure.
Now you're in the Paul Stastny part. You're in the Paul Stastny situation, which is he's helping you too much. You trade him, you probably won't get enough back, and he's part of your success, and you're likely going to make the playoffs, which happened with Colorado last year and Frolik. Now I know Stastny's a better player than Frolik, but the idea is the same. You have to ride it out and then see what happens, and then you try and make an offer to him. And if he gets a better offer, he might go elsewhere.
Sure.
So
in that Colorado lost, ended up losing him for nothing.
Yep.
They didn't get any asset in return for him because he helped them so much that they played better than they thought they would have when at the beginning of last season, they would have thought Paul Stastny would be trade bait at the trade deadline time.
Yeah. Or they could, exactly.
Or they could have re-signed him,
right,
or whatever else.
I mean, that's the difficult decisions that come with that.
Sure. Good problems to have for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Colorado obviously would have liked to have gone to the second round, and then
right now again, we want to get into if and what.
Yeah,
if Tyson Berry isn't injured, and that they went to seven games in overtime, and Niederreiter scores. without Stasny, do they get to seven games? They get three home dates. Does that? It's not even $1 million now. It's probably $1.5 million or $2 million
of revenue per playoff home game. That's what the estimate is. So you're right. You're lining the coffers of the team. You ended up losing them, but you know, so be it. In Colorado,
I think organizationally you have to make that trade, but it's difficult, right? Sure. I mean, that's the thing. That's decisions that get to this point. And Alan Walsh, we'll talk about it later. But Alan Walsh is a leverage guy.
Yeah.
Look what happened. He's getting all the leverage he wants right now, and
he's going to hold the Jets feet to the fire
yeah.
when it comes to Michael Frolik. And we'll talk about Frolik coming up in about 30 minutes' time.
Yep.
Let's head to break. When we return, it's never too early to preview the next Jets game, the Jets and the Penguins, Tuesday night in Pittsburgh. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
.12:17 in the afternoon, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Les Rikus, Linden Market Dental Center. Great Jets fan.
Yes. Get frequent texts from our good buddy Les talking about the Jets, passionate about the team. So definitely check him out at the Linden Market Dental Center.
If you're
going
to go to a dentist, you might as well go to one that you can talk hockey with.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like,
that's only standard operating procedure. That's, you know, the way it's supposed to be. You go to the dentist, you know, you want to have a good conversation.
It's always interesting, though, when you're at the dentist, is like, can you talk when the stuff's in your mouth? Like, I always wonder about that. Like, when there's something going on in there, like, can you still talk?
You're able to have somewhat of a conversation. It's not the most, you know, you're not in the best possible situation to have a long-winded conversation, but you can get your point across. That's why your hands are such good. You know, you can gesticulate wildly with your hands.
There's nothing. How do you know what you're saying, then?
Doesn't matter. You can get, I mean, you've seen the episode of Seinfeld where Kramer decides to stop talking, and he just uses his body language to get his point across.
State communication is 90%, isn't that one commercial I saw? Nonverbal?
Yeah, well, that would make sense. Exactly. So nonverbal communication is
the people right now are hoping this show would be 90% nonverbal.
Yeah, exactly. We're just going to just wildly gesticulate on radio for the next 2.5 hours. That'll be that'll be terrific.
Good to see Remus here.
Yes, nice to see Remus that he's here. He's getting some audio for us, even though he thought he was opping the show.
That's what I wanted to mention.
Yeah, we were pleased to instead have our good buddy Chris Curry behind the board, bringing us on and off the air today. Remus, difficulty reading a schedule, but that's okay.
Well, why don't we tell the listeners what Remus said on Wednesday?
He said on Wednesday that I asked him, are you opping on Saturday? They said, I'll check maybe. Yeah.
I don't check the schedule until later.
Yeah.
And who somehow appeared today who wasn't on the schedule?
Remus. So he didn't quite check the schedule close enough or at all. Jets and the Penguins Tuesday night in Pittsburgh.
Well, they're going to play a Penguins team that's not really a Penguins team. To be honest, Drew, you don't have Crosby or Malkin.
Yeah.
And so that's the whole team. And again, I know, it's not the whole team.
No Letang, too.
No Letang, too. And those are your three best offensive players. And you could argue your three best players. So the Jets have, this is a kind of a freebie here, Drew. They have their number one center essentially would be Brandon Sutter.
Yeah.
Certainly not number one center. You could argue the merits of his ability to even be a top-notch number three center, which everybody expected him to be when he came into the National Hockey League. Some people sometimes think that Brandon Sutter, just as an aside, some people think Brandon Sutter with that Sutter name is just aggressive. He's not the most aggressive, you know what I mean? So he's not. So you got Pittsburgh team here that doesn't have their best player. Crosby doesn't have their second best player, who's basically would be 2018's best player.
Well,
Evgeny
Malkin. You're talking about two of the top five players in the entire league.
That's right. So then you're looking at a team that's had, you know, no Hornquist, no Letang,
no matter.
Five of your top seven guys are out. So the Jets should go in there, Pittsburgh team, and they should be able to take that game. And that's a simple look at it. Now, you have a Pittsburgh team, again, without Letang, without Mata, you're going to want to make sure you take advantage of the lack of ability of guys, you know, maybe a Bortuzzo, a little slower player like that. You have some youth on the back end now. Now, guys like Pouliot can move the puck real well, but you want to make sure you test them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then offensively, how are they going to be able to sustain pressure at Pittsburgh? That's what I wonder. How do they create offense, especially against this Jets D that is now loaded up? So I don't see if you're Pittsburgh. First of all, who's the line you want to get out against? Which defensive pairing? Like, that is a concerning thing to me. If I'm Mike Johnson, I'm saying, okay, which is my number one line? Who even knows that? Well, I don't know what their lineup is going to be.
Kunitz and I mean,
we'll ask Mike Colligan what they're going to line up as, or you know, talk about that. But the idea is, okay, Drew, even if it's Kunitz, whoever, and Perron. Okay, Kunitz, Sutter, and Perron. Say they wanted to go that way.
Sure.
What line? You're saying, okay, I want to play those guys up against, and this is what the Jets' strength is here. Bogosian, Byfuglien, Trouba, you have all different pairings.
Mm-hmm.
So pick your poison.
Yeah.
Now, sure, long-term it's an issue money-wise and all time of play and all that stuff. But right now is all you're concerned about if you're a Jets fan. And next game is what you're concerned about. That's all you're concerned about if you're Paul Maurice. And if you're Mike Johnson, I don't think there is any edge. So how are they going to create enough offense? And the Jets look at it and say, okay, well, we can take advantage of Christian Ehrhoff. I mean, not very good in his own zone. Cheats a bit. Not good along the boards. Great offensively, but, I mean, defensively, he's lacking, right? Bertuzzo, a slower skater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Paul Martin, a little soft. So there's things you can take advantage of there. And some of the youthful guys they put in the lineup there with Harrington and Pouliot, right? So you really have a lot to take advantage of if you're the Winnipeg Jets. And the Penguins' power play, which is such a strength, clearly is a strength because Malkin, Crosby, and Letang play all the time. All three of them are not there. Hornquist also positioning himself in front of the net, or you know, with a good shot that he has. So this is a nice this schedule that early in the season you see Pittsburgh, Philly. Now I didn't think Philly was going to be a playoff team, and they're tough to play against because they're kind of reckless. But
yeah.
This really is two games that the Jets are better than both these teams. Now you could argue if they're better than the Penguins healthy, but they're better than the Penguins on paper and Philly on paper before these two games come up. So you should be able to pull at least 3 out of 4 here.
Well, you're taking 134 total points out of the Penguins lineup.
Yeah, and that's Jeff. Exactly.
I mean, 134, I mean, I think you're hard-pressed to find any other team where you can take 134 points out of their lineup with only 3 players.
That's also
I mean, I think you probably can't.
You're right.
Maybe Giroux, Voracek, and somebody in Philly.
Yeah,
but I mean that's about it.
Yeah.
So you're lining up against a Penguins team here that is not the Pittsburgh Penguins. It's you know the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins.
I mean they're top guys and they're not the deepest team. You know, I really would have loved to have seen. First of all, you always want to see the best. You know, Crosby, Malkin. But I would have really would have liked to have seen Crosby, Malkin, because I would have liked to have seen how Mike Johnson as a home coach played his forwards against the Jets D.
The game in Winnipeg.
That's what I would like to have seen.
That was one of the best games. Really,
matchups that would tell us what the other teams play, what the other coaches think of the Jets D.
Sure, they would. You'd see. Okay, well, we think we can take advantage of this pairing of the Jets. When you look at the Jets defense, and it's solid from what we think is it's as solid as it's been the last 4 years.
Oh yeah, I mean right now the Jets defense in the league is top 5 for sure.
Sure, I mean
you can even inch towards. Possibly inch towards top 3. Really?
That might be a fun exercise for next Saturday's show, actually.
Note that, yeah.
Is to look at the Jets' defense, the top 6, and I mean, you can either throw Harrison or Stewart in there. I don't think it's really fairly interchangeable.
That won't be the determining factor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, look at the other 5 Jets defensemen, Trouba, Bogosian, Byfuglien, Enstrom, and Sherratt right now, and match them up against the other 29 teams and tell me which defense would you rather have over the Jets' defense.
Truth be told, when you're doing that battle, Drew, and you're doing that exercise, and we're doing this off the cuff here. I mean, you're really looking to the division that you're in.
Yeah.
Nashville
with
St. Louis,
Seth Jones,
Chicago,
and Weber. Yeah. You're right. You'd probably put the Jets. I mean, and we'll flesh this out next week but you're absolutely right. You're looking at a Jets defense that is absolutely stacked.
Shows you how tough that division is, though.
Well, everybody knows that division is just incredible. But you're right. Let's get back to the Penguins. I mean, you're without your top 2 centers, Crosby, Malkin, 2 of the top 5 players in the NHL. Your third line center you mentioned is Brandon Sutter. Your fourth line center right now is Mark Arcabello, who you just acquired off of waivers.
Yep.
So you are a depleted Pittsburgh Penguins lineup.
Now you're not going to get any sympathy from the Jets considering what they've faced this year.
No, absolutely not. Exactly.
As you shouldn't.
And then you look at the back end for the Penguins, and like you mentioned, no Letang, and Letang is a dynamite player. I mean, he's got his. Some shortcomings in the defensive zone, but they're more than made up for it on this offensive side.
Absolutely.
And now, so you're asking, I mean, your Penguins back end, you know, it does not have much in terms of offense coming out. Ehrhoff's more offensively inclined, but he's only got 13 points this year, so he hasn't been tearing things up. He's still got some skills, certainly.
Yeah, no, he's an offensively capable player. I mean, the opportunity plays a factor in that as well.
Sure, because Letang plays more of the key minutes. But after that, I mean, you know, there's just not a... And losing Olli Maatta, you know, and you lost him earlier.
Well,
he's
Maatta
had a,
really is your, you know, is capable beyond his age, right? I mean, you're, sure. you have a guy that in reality is just a solid stay-at-home guy, you know, move the puck, make the simple play, and that's usually
but
something that takes time.
He's got some offensive upside,
well, he
too.
He does, but I'm saying, but like, he's able to, exactly, he does. But he's not the most dynamic offensive player, Drew.
No, but he's only, I mean, for 20 years, for a 20-year-old defenseman, he's...
That's what I'm saying, he plays about, you know, well beyond his years in terms of his maturity in his game. He does the simple things well, he's able to defend, he's tough, he's strong, he's a bigger guy, so that's a huge loss as well.
Yeah, so I mean, likely if you're looking at the Penguins, I mean... And we don't know this for sure, we'll ask Mike Colligan about it in a couple minutes. You got a guy like, you know, Scott Harrington who comes into the lineup and, you know, for Chris Letang.
Again, Scott Harrington and Derek Pouliot, there are two Canadian World Junior defensemen.
Right.
I've only had the opportunity to see them briefly in those tournaments, so I can't speak to their talent level. But, you know, from what I hear, Pouliot's is the more talented of the two, but they're capable young defensemen, and the Penguins have been talking about their young defense for some time.
Sure.
The problem is that they've been talking about it an awful long time, and these guys have taken a little while to come, which isn't, again, uncharacteristic of development for defensemen, but, you know, this is their time to kind of make some hay.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you look at, I mean, the centerman issue for the, you know, the wingers are still good, but Kunitz and Perron with Crosby are a hell of a lot better than Kunitz and Perron with Brandon Sutter or with Mark Arcabello. So the Jets really, as long as the Jets...
This is true.
As long as... I know. Really, good insight there,
yeah,
right?
There you go, Drew.
Yeah. As long as the Jets can, you know, have their attention to detail back in time and they're not still on vacation in their minds entering into Tuesday night's game, because every one of the Jets players is, you know, is on vacation somewhere warm right now. It's what happens.
Likely.
Likely. You're right. It's what happens at the All-Star break is those guys usually get out of town for a few days.
Like anybody else. I mean, they need a break.
Absolutely. We all need a break from work whenever we get our opportunity, so they're no different. As long as they're back and focused in time for Tuesday's game, and the attention to detail that we've seen from head coach Paul Maurice and the demands he has put on his players seems to indicate that they will likely be checked in time for the game, because we have not seen them check out, whether it's that game in Chicago right before the Christmas break or the game at home to Columbus on Wednesday right before the All-Star break. We've seen these guys have been locked in when they hit the ice. You would expect the Jets to take advantage of a weakened Penguins opponent.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's there for the taking, Drew. And then the Philly. Then you focus on the Philly game after, which is also there for the taking as far as I'm concerned.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll bring in Mike Colligan. He covers the Pittsburgh Penguins. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend. He covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Hockey Writers. He also works for Forbes Sports Money, Mike Colligan. Mike, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
Great to be talking with you guys again. It's been a couple months, and I guess at the middle of the season now, lots to talk about, especially as we head into the second half, the trade deadline, and ultimately the playoffs.
Absolutely. Brought you on, of course, to talk about the Jets and the Penguins ahead of Tuesday night's game in Pittsburgh. Sidney Crosby announced that he's obviously missing this All-Star weekend, and as a result, he's going to miss at least one game, that being the Tuesday game against the Jets. Is there a serious injury there or a real concern, or is this more of a function of the Penguins don't mind sitting him out against the Jets and missing the All-Star weekend in order to keep him healthy for the remainder of the season?
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what, Drew, there hasn't been a lot of information. This was the first that any thing had come out of the team as far as an injury to Crosby, but he hasn't looked to himself for longer than what they admitted was the injury. They said back to January 10th against Montreal was when he got hurt. I think it's been longer than that he's been struggling with something, whether that was the same injury, the lower body injury they're talking about now, or perhaps the wrist injury that was bothering him in the playoffs last year, maybe a combination of both. He hasn't looked himself this year, and so I think it makes a lot of sense to just, no matter what he's dealing with, getting him some rest. We've seen these guys wear down in the past. We see superstars that have the opportunity to miss that All-Star weekend and get a longer break, and I think the Penguins know that to avoid any controversy, they've probably got to sit him out a game just to kind of cement the injury in place there. So I think missing that game on Tuesday will certainly take care of that. He's supposed to head back onto the ice Tuesday, and we might see him again Wednesday at Washington or perhaps Friday at New Jersey. So I think from that standpoint, it makes sense. I think it even would have made sense for Marc-Andre Fleury to get a break as well. He's played a lot of games this year, and more than he's used to, I think it would have served him well to have a break, but he replaced an injury replacement heading into the weekend, so he gets an opportunity to hop in there and maybe get some playing time a couple nights from now as well.
You know, Mike, haven't really seen the Penguins play too much of late. Saw them a few times earlier in the season, and you look at the stat sheet, and Crosby and Malkin essentially have very similar statistics this year. You know, you've seen them play obviously more than we have. Who would you say has been the better of the two so far this year?
I think it's been Malkin. You know, he has the same amount of points, but he has become a more complete player this year. And what was interesting was he missed, I think, almost all of training camp or most of it, maybe even right into the season, where he really hadn't skated at all, was slow to get up to speed. And that was something that I think was a concern as well with a new head coach and a guy that doesn't have a big resume. Mike Johnson is a brand new NHL head coach, and there were questions about how would a guy like Evgeny Malkin respond to that? Would he be bought into the system and the changes and everything that was coming with the new coaching staff? There were rumors in the offseason he may not be engaged or he was unhappy. Again, Malkin's a tough guy to read. We know what Sidney Crosby's thinking. He's in front of the media. He's a pretty straight shooter. Malkin, he's more of an enigma. We use that name or that term all the time with Russian players, but I think the fact that he's so quiet and keeps to himself, it's tough to see where he's at. But for all of that cloud of suspicion and question marks around him, he's been completely the opposite. He's been engaged. He's been playing on both sides of the puck, and he's been able to take over games like he used to do a couple years ago when he won the Conn Smythe Trophy and a number of awards as the NHL leading scorer when Crosby was out with an injury. That's the Malkin they've seen again this year, and I think he's definitely been the more effective of the two players.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Pittsburgh Penguins journalist Mike Colligan. He covers the team for HockeyWriters.com, also covers hockey for Forbes Sports Money. Mike, the Penguins went out probably about a month ago now, or give or take a couple, a week or so, and acquired David Perron from the Edmonton Oilers in exchange for a first-round pick. How has David Perron fit in to the Penguins lineup?
Oh, he's been great so far. I think it's been really a perfect acquisition for them. You knew that Perron was available, and it's something in hindsight that made a ton of sense for Jim Rutherford, general manager, to go out and make that move. Perron has had 5 goals in the 8 games he's played so far with the Penguins, and he's fitting very well with Crosby. You know, Crosby can be a difficult guy to play with. Mm-hmm. I think he requires very strict discipline as far as where you go on the ice, where you set up, and that's the thing. I've watched him interact with his line mates before. He'll say, go to this area, get open and from this angle, and I'll get you the puck, and you can watch him over and over again do it and even make passes through lanes that you don't even think exist. And that's what I think Perron has been very good at doing. He's adapted very quickly to the style of Crosby, and he adds a right-handed shot that I think is very valuable when you think of, you know, a guy that can open up on that left wing and really be there to just crank home one-timers. It's very valuable for the power play as well. The Penguins haven't had a great right-handed shot option opposite the left-handed Malkin and Crosby on the power play. That now balances it out, and I think gives them an even greater threat with the man advantage. So I think Perron's fitting in very well. He's working hard. He's fitting with kind of this new image and new attitude that the Penguins have tried to instill this year. I think he's been a great acquisition from almost every angle.
And Mike, you mentioned Mike Johnson in his first year as an NHL head coach. How has he changed his coaching style throughout the year?
You know, early on, I thought it was going to be a challenge. Anytime there's a new head coach, it's tough for a team to kind of adapt to that quickly, get up to speed. We saw that in Washington this year. They've been slow to get going under Barry Trotz. We saw that last year with the New York Rangers and Alain Vigneault. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the year, they were in the Stanley Cup Finals. The Penguins, on the other hand, came out on fire. They won a ton of games early on. And I think part of that was because Johnston really simplified things. One of the criticisms of Dan Bylsma, former head coach, was that he had so many complicated details that players were thinking too much instead of really just playing hockey. And that was a complaint of a number of guys, was that there was just too many face-off plays and details and things that they just couldn't remember after a while, especially for a new player that was coming in and had to learn all of that. Johnston's been the opposite. He's simplified the game. He's relied more on, I think, supporting the puck, quicker, shorter passes, and making sure that you've got, you know, three and four guys supporting at all times. What's been interesting and why they've been losing games, I think, lately is that some of these division teams are now seeing them for the second and third time. They're adapting to that. They're starting to smother the Penguins, trap them on the breakout a little bit because they are all on one side of the ice supporting the puck. Now the real challenge for Mike Johnston will be, what does he do? How does he kind of adapt to the teams that are starting to figure him out? I think that'll be a big storyline in the second half of the season here.
Mike Colligan is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for thehockeywriters.com, also covers hockey for Forbes Sports Money. Mike, you look at the back end of the Penguins, and we know they're going to be without Olli Maatta for the rest of the year, and then Chris Letang gets just terrible hit by Zach Rinaldo earlier in the week. You know, are the young defensemen in the Penguins system good enough to step in with all the defensive injuries, or is Jim Rutherford going to have to look out to outside in order to get somebody to fill the void?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. You know, prior to the season, I think the thought was that the Penguins had too many defensemen. They had these young first-round picks that were working their way up and now ready to make the jump, hopefully, to the NHL. We saw what Maatta was able to do last year and be an impact player as a kind of a top-four guy at such a young age. But they are sitting in a situation now where I think that's the question. They're almost in between, where they've got Paul Martin and Christian Ehrhoff, who are in the final year of their contracts, potentially will need extensions or else will hit free agency. You've got these younger guys that is really the future of the Penguins' blue line, but I don't know that they've shown they're totally ready yet. And if they're showing that in the regular season, that can be a concern when you get into the playoffs, and now you're relying on a 19-year-old or 20-year-old that really doesn't have the experience, doesn't have the strength quite yet. I think Derek Pouliot and Scott Harrington, two of their most promising prospects, will be really, really good defensemen in the NHL someday. I just don't know if that day is this year. And so the question is, what do you do there? You've got two big defensemen that are heading to free agency. You've got these young players that you don't want to just trade to get a short-term fix. But you just hate to look at that group, which on the whole is very, very strong, and think, I've got to spend my assets to really upgrade that in some way. But I think that may be what Jim Rutherford has to do. I think now adding Perron to the mix, and if the Penguins can get healthy up front, that gives them a pretty good forward group. But I think now the question becomes, what do they do with this defense, and do they trust these young players enough to play in big, high-intensity playoff games? That's going to be a tough one to answer.
I guess this next one probably relates a little bit to your answer right there, Mike, but Christian Ehrhoff, you know, coming in on that short-term deal, do you see the team looking to extend him, or is it possible that they let him go and a guy like Pouliot take that spot?
I think they'll look to extend him. I think he'll need a hometown discount or a Pittsburgh discount to really make something work there, because when you think of what he's capable of getting on the free agent market this summer, and a market that's always pretty shallow, he could probably cash in again for a long-term deal for big money. The Penguins don't have the ability to fit that, especially with a guy like Letang that's already locked up in a similar fashion. So I think they'll try to keep him. I don't think they'll try to keep Paul Martin. I think he'll hit free agency. Yeah. I even thought there was an opportunity to trade Martin this season if they were fully healthy. Losing Maatta is a big hit to that plan, so I think they've got to hold on to Martin and probably lose him for nothing in the summer. But if they can find a way to keep Ehrhoff, I think, you know, right now at $4 million, he's a very, very good value, and I think they'll certainly try to do that, especially for as well as he fits into this new style of Pittsburgh hockey under Mike Johnston. Certainly an asset and a valuable player from that standpoint.
Mike Colligan is our guest. He covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for thehockeywriters.com. Also covers the NHL for Forbes Sports Money. Mike, it's been speaking of money, it's been a couple months since we had you on, and a couple months since Marc-Andre Fleury signed his contract extension. You know, what are your thoughts on that deal? And, you know, have they changed at all in the last few months?
Yeah, really interesting one, and tough to evaluate when you think about Marc-Andre Fleury. He's won a Stanley Cup, but just can't seem to escape the criticisms over his play, and certainly hasn't done anything to address that with his playoff performances the last few years. But when you look at what it costs to get a above average goalie, I'll say, and you look what a guy like Sergei Bobrovsky just got from Columbus, it's a valuable contract in that sense. Fleury's a guy that's had, I think, as many wins as anyone, maybe just Henrik Lundqvist has had more if you look over the last 4 or 5 years. So he's been a model of consistency and great play in the regular season. He's come up short in a couple of postseasons, and that's the big lingering question. But I think the Penguins looked at it as, you know, hey, you lose a guy like Fleury or you find a new destination for him, what's it going to cost, whether it's assets or cap money, to go and find a solution that you can rely on? I think you look across the league, there aren't a ton of solid, experienced goaltenders that are just sitting there waiting to be picked up. And that's when they weighed the opportunity there with what it might cost them. They figure they've got a guy in Fleury that they trust. They didn't sign him for too long, which I think is critical when you look at what a Lundqvist is getting and signed through halfway through his retirement, it seems, and where he'll be a decade from now. That's the key with the Fleury deal, is it's manageable, it's short, and it's a guy that at this point they trust. They just hope he can show up when it counts in the playoffs.
Final question for you, Mike. And Jim Rutherford's in his first season here in Pittsburgh. He was brought in, as many thought, for a short-term period here, an older guy going to come in for, say, 2-3 years. Has anything changed with that plan, or is he still looking to stay kind of for a short term and then have somebody else take over?
Yeah, a lot of mixed messages there. You know, when he signed a 3-year deal, I believe, when he came in, his introductory press conference, he mentioned he'll be here 2 or 3 years. So there were some eyebrows raised at the fact that he had a 3-year deal, yet was already talking about 2. I've heard there's a potential that he may not be around next summer. But again, there's so much uncertainty and questions there as far as what his long-term looks like, and I think a lot will depend on what happens with this team in the playoffs. You know, Pierre Maguire had hinted as he went through the process for interviewing for that GM job last summer that there was a lot of pressure on this team now to succeed. That was the excuse for why they got rid of Ray Shiro and Dan Bylsma, as the team hadn't advanced to the Stanley Cup Finals for a number of years. That pressure is not going to go away, and so if the Penguins are bounced in the first round, I think it's safe to say that everyone could be on the line at that point, whether it's Rutherford or whether it's Mike Johnston, especially if you talk about maybe a guy like Mike Babcock being out there. The Penguins aren't going to sit tight, and so I think from that sense, no one could be safe. So we'll see what happens. Rutherford's obviously getting up there in age and came out of retirement to do this in the first place. But there's going to be a lot of questions, and it'll all depend on really what happens on the ice over the next few months here.
I'm going to ask you another last question, Mike, because you brought up Dan Bylsma and Ray Shiro. Are you surprised that neither of them have been employed yet in the NHL, or are you expecting them to kind of wait and pick their gig?
I would say yes to both of those, actually. I think I am surprised that, you know, Shiro was a guy that was, I think, very talented. I think he did a great job in Pittsburgh, and people take for granted how tough it is to win the Stanley Cup multiple times and at least have that success. Bylsma, it's going to be tough to gauge him until he gets another job. You know, he was blessed with a talented roster, but I think both are guys that teams would love to have. I know they've been talking to teams, and they're also being paid by the Pittsburgh Penguins at this point, and certainly the Penguins control what happens with them over the next couple years here, as they're getting pretty significant paychecks every couple weeks. But I think they'll be picked up, and they'll have their hand-picked choice of where they want to go, whether that's this summer or over the next couple months. They're too talented the guys that are really going to be able to pick their destination. So I don't think it'll be long until both are back in the National Hockey League.
Mike Colligan covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for thehockeywriters.com. He's also the NHL analyst for Forbes Sports Money. Mike, appreciate your time as always. Thanks very much for doing this.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Mike.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we are going to talk about Michael Frolik and his contract status.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We're going to push back our discussion about Michael Frolik's contract analysis by about 10 or so minutes, I think, so that we can bring you the latest from the NHL's media availability in Columbus, specifically the news surrounding the return of the World Cup of Hockey in 2016. Here is Gary Bettman, commissioner, this happened minutes ago, regarding the World Cup of Hockey upcoming in 2016.
I think everybody understood. If you look at the other teams, no other country could be as well equipped with NHL players as the Big Four from Europe. And so the notion was to get a really competitive tournament going without the benefit of pre-qualification. But the fact that we're going to have a great pan-European team is going to make the tournament all that more exciting, all that more competitive. There are going to be great storylines. And the view was everybody understands that this is the starting point and we're going to evolve.
So the NHL has just announced that the 2016 World Cup will feature the following teams. Team Canada, Team United States, a team from the Czech Republic, Russia, Sweden, and Finland. Those are six countries. They will each have their own team. The other two teams will be new to the competition. Team Europe, which will feature the best players from Slovakia, Switzerland, Denmark, Germany, pretty much anywhere in Slovenia in the case of Anze Kopitar, Norway in the case of Mats Zuccarello, pretty much any team that is not any player from a country not already represented in the first six countries. And then the eighth team is team, quote, North American Young Stars, which will be a team of players from Canada and the United States that are 23 years of age and under. Now you're asking, I'm sure, you know, Connor McDavid in the 2016 World Cup, if he takes the NHL by storm like we all expect, well, he should be on Team Canada. He's going to be good enough to play for Team Canada, quite possibly. He was not eligible to play for Team Canada in the 2016 World Cup. Any North American player that is 23 or under at the time of the World Cup must play for Team North American Young Stars. Richie, your thoughts?
Well, I think this is like easily the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in terms of international hockey. You tell me. They must have had somebody submit the worst ideas known to man in a box. And Gary Bettman and Donald Fehr decided to pick out of the box the worst idea out of the box of worst ideas. The submissions must have been terrible because this was the worst one. There's no other rationale. And this is a joke. I'm not watching this tournament. I'm not watching this tournament. Seriously. It's going to be September. You're going to have some football starting. Baseball playoff race. Nice outside. Sorry. So I'm not going to watch Canada against Canada and the U.S. I can't. If you're Nathan MacKinnon, you're Connor McDavid, as you mentioned, Drew, how are you going to get up to play Canada?
You're Jacob Trouba. How are you going to get up to play?
If you want these guys to hate each other in the World Juniors, Canada, U.S., and then become teammates for 4 years before playing against each other again and have the same hatred and have the same passion for beating each other? Who, honestly, I don't know how this becomes. This actually comes to fruition. I don't know how that's possible. Is there any logical thought process going on in these meetings? Or is it just cash? Even then, if people don't watch this, there won't be as much cash. Hopefully they'll learn from it. Because this tournament had the potential to be even better than the Olympics if they made it an 8-team tournament. Anybody plays for whatever countries, you know, do a qualification with four teams, Germany, Slovakia, Slovenia, and Switzerland. They play in like they used to. You make an 8-team tournament wherever you're going to be. I'm sure it's only going to be in Toronto so they can make as much money as possible, like the World Juniors, whatever. I can deal with that. It's fine. Okay? Make it a best of three semis, a best of five finals, or a best of, an elimination, then a best of three finals. You can make this, you can make it a tournament, you can make it a great tournament. Instead, they give me 23 and under team. You know, I can't wait. You know what? I can't wait for this tournament to evolve to, well, let's do 23 and under against 27 to 31. I hope the 31 to 35 team can beat the 24 to 27 team 1 year. What they should do instead is they should have, why don't we put the 24-year-old Czech players with the 27-year-old Canadian players and the 31-year-old U.S. players on a team with the 36-year-old team from all over Europe. What a waste. What a waste.
The format is going to be two groups of four where they'll play a round-robin competition before they'll move on to a one-game semifinal.
Who cares?
Following the one-game semifinal, there'll be a best-of-three format between the two semifinal winners.
So who am I going to hope for? So I'm Canadian, and the Canadian under 23 team has 10 Canadians and 8 Americans, and Canada's playing against 10 Canadians and 8 Americans. Do I really care what happens?
Probably not.
If the 10 Canadians on that under 23 team are going to be on the Olympic team in 2018?
Well, or no, whether or not there's going to be an Olympic team is a separate issue altogether.
Well, if they replace the Olympics with this joke of a tournament, speechless. Speechless.
The expectation is that the tournament will be held in Toronto.
Oh, what a shock.
With potentially
a game in New York City, probably.
Buffalo, apparently. Some games in Buffalo.
People can drive down from Toronto.
Yes, because if you can't, it'll be for the people that can't get tickets.
Nothing like
Toronto.
Getting American interest when you drop a game in Buffalo.
Yeah. Big city, big market, American interest.
I'm sure the Americans' interest, which is obviously very important, you'd think, to the NHL as a whole. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're going to be really excited to watch the 23-year-old mixed Canada-US team against the team of assortment of players from Europe. How are you going to market that game?
Come see the best that Slovenia, Norway, Switzerland, Germany, and Denmark have to offer?
I just don't understand. That's unbelievable to me. I was so excited for this tournament. It's unbelievable to me that they would botch it. But again, it shouldn't be that unbelievable.
Yeah. The training camp for each team was scheduled to begin Sunday, September 4th, 2016. The training camps will be conducted in the location of each team's choosing, with each team being permitted to host at least one exhibition game at a site of its choice.
A.K.A. we're going to go to where we can make the most money.
Uh-huh. So the Team Canada will
charge regular, if not higher, prices.
Team Canada will hold its training camp likely in, maybe Montreal, and charge, play an exhibition game in Montreal, and then maybe Team 23 and under will hold their training camp in Vancouver and, play an exhibition game in Vancouver or something. Just a way to milk as much money as possible. This is the best part of the whole thing, though.
Am I ready for this, Drew?
During the final days of preparation leading up to the opening of the tournament, the teams will be brought together in a more central North American location for a final pre-tournament exhibition game.
Great.
What is it? The whole thing's an exhibition to begin with. So you're playing some exhibition games, then moving to another central location for even more exhibition games.
Why?
You're speechless.
Yeah, I just don't understand. I just don't understand how this actually. I haven't talked to one person on the streets who thinks this is a good idea when that rumor came out. And then I remember reading about. I forget who it was who wrote that the NHL was surprised by the backlash. Well, they clearly didn't care about the backlash because they followed through on this stupid idea.
I'm curious what the logos are going to look like for Team 23 and under and for Team
Canadian,
Random.
Half of the flag with half of the U.S. flag. So it's going to be like 25 stars and then like half of a maple leaf.
What about for Team Random European countries? That could lead to some border skirmishes
over
it.
It's going to look like the All-Star jersey.
Yeah, no, nothing will look as bad as the All-Star jersey.
Boy, that's a real group they got running the show there.
You are speechless, I must say.
I can't even believe this. I mean, it's a joke.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss Michael Frolik and his contract situation. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Have to mention, in addition to Bernstein's Deli in the Cordon Village Mall, special occasion this weekend, so today, tomorrow, and then again next Saturday, mm-hmm. Bernstein's Deli are cooking brunch at the Raw Almond Restaurant on the river, right at the foot of the Forks. So head down there, open at 9 a.m., taking new customers up until 1 p.m. It's a three-course fixed-price menu. $35, a great opportunity for you to participate in the Raw Almond extravaganza, the Raw Almond festivities, with Bernstein's Deli head chef Beth Jacob cooking at the Forks. It's a terrific event if you haven't had the opportunity. And with it being so nice outside, please, dear God, get outside.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. You were talking about heading down there tomorrow.
I am. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, Laura and I are planning on doing the same thing.
Other end of the table, Drew.
Yeah,
it's a long table, right?
It can be a long table. I mean, it depends on if we're there at the same time, but I would request that you not acknowledge me outside of the studio right now. That's all I ever ask out of you. So anyways, check it out. Bernstein's Deli at the Raw Almond Dinner this weekend and next Saturday. And, of course, Bernstein's Deli in the Cordon Village Mall. Richie, want to talk about Michael Frolik. We mentioned him sort of earlier on in the program as he's in the midst of his final year contract here with the Winnipeg Jets.
Yep.
An unrestricted free agent at season's end. And, you know, I think a lot of people were sort of surprised at the end of last season when the Jets and Frolik could not come to an agreement on a longer-term contract. This year, he's got 10 goals and 16 assists for 26 points in 48 games. Last year, he had 15 goals and 27 assists for 42 points in 81 games. You know, has his value, in your mind, changed at all between the end of last season and thus far this season? Or are the Jets and Frolik's agent, Alan Walsh, sort of in a similar situation to where they couldn't come to an agreement last year?
That's a good question, Drew. I think his value has probably gone up because of the success. I mean, especially to the Jets, because of the success of the team. And, you know, if you look at it, as you mentioned, his point total, those points per game is pretty similar as it was last year, you know, a little bit more. It's about very similar, a little more goals, maybe a little less assists. But the point is, his chemistry, I think it's both ways, because his chemistry with this with Perreault and Scheifele, obviously Perreault injured now, but Perreault and Scheifele and the way that line's been going and dropping on certain lines and the success they've had, I think it's probably increased his value to Winnipeg, which increases probably what he would get paid here.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you look at the rest of the league, I mean, his overall point totals don't change, but they see the success and the ability of him to play in different situations. I think that makes him more appealing to teams in the National Hockey League. And if he plays in a second-line role, whether his point total changes significantly or not, if he plays in a second-line role, I think other teams see him as possibly being able to fill that role for them, and that would increase his value. I think the longer you wait, usually the more valuable you become.
Sure.
And and what happens is, and Mike Colgan mentioned in the first hour when we had him on, it's a supply and demand. And there's going to be a lack of supply, and there's going to be a high demand. And what's that going to do? It's going to boost prices for free agents. And, you know, Michael Frolik right now, if you could have got him on a deal for $3.5 million before, I mean, you're looking at probably minimum on the free agent market, probably $4.5 million now. And do you want to pay that? And does that get up to $5 million? I don't know. I wouldn't pay him $5 million, but he could get up to that point, and it takes one team. That's all it takes. One team who's offering him, say, 4 years, $4.5 million, and the other team says, well, we're not going to let $500,000 a year get in the way here. We'll offer him $5 million for 4 years, 5 years. I mean, I don't know. It's going to be tough, and then you get into the situation of, okay, who are you paying? Because you got to pay him. You got to pay Frolik this year if you're going to bring him back,
mm-hmm.
and the year after that, you got to pay Trouba, Hutchinson, Scheifele,
Ladd,
Byfuglien, and Ladd.
Yeah.
Now, Byfuglien and Ladd are two guys we'll have to be dealt with before that because they're UFAs, as you mentioned, Drew, in terms of Frolik this year. But you can't sign Frolik in a vacuum, not taking into consideration what the other players are going to cost you when they hit free agency. Huge factors here.
Today's January 24th. At this point in time, you know, the Jets have been able to negotiate a contract extension with Michael Frolik for a little more than 3 weeks.
Yes.
Because he was on a one-year deal, they had to wait until January 1st to begin, you know, contract negotiations.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Frolik and if you're Frolik's agent, Alan Walsh, at this point in time, are you just going to wait and see what free agency brings to you? Is there any advantage for signing away now unless the Jets, you know, offer you what we would probably both think is too much money in the $5 million range? You know, assuming Kevin Cheveldayoff sticks in and around where, you know, the $3.5 million, $4 million range, are you waiting until free agency regardless?
Not necessarily. If they go up into, yeah, I mean, I guess if they're not going up into that high number, the high numbers you mentioned, there's no incentive right now.
Right.
And the Jets are not going to trade him because of the success they've had so far this year. So, again, this is back to the first hour of the Paul Stastny comparison. You're between a rock and a hard place here. Or you let him become a free agent. Well, I mean, if you let him go, if he waits until now and they can't get something worked out and they're not going to meet your price, then why wouldn't you wait any longer? From a leverage perspective, why wouldn't you wait any longer? Why wouldn't you get the offers out there? The truth is, if the Jets think that their offer is pretty reasonable,
mm-hmm.
They might be say, okay, you know, I don't think you're going to get too much more on the market. I don't think they probably feel that way. One or two teams, not a lot of players out there. Look what David Clarkson got. Again, it takes one team to pay these guys that kind of money.
Sure.
So look at a team that, you know, loses a winger or two and needs to fill it, you know. They say, okay, this guy can play in all situations. We need him. He can play second PP. He can play on the penalty kill. He can play with good players. He can play with guys on the checking line. He's a valuable player in terms of what we need. We have money. That's all it takes. One. And that's why I think he's, you know, leverage factor. And the other thing is you could say, okay, but, you know, the opportunity he's got in Winnipeg, he may not have such an opportunity elsewhere. You don't think the team signing him is going to promise him that kind of opportunity? I mean, that's what happens, right? You make promises in free agency. You don't always fulfill the promises that you make, but you do make them. And so any team that's, you know, if he's playing any team that signs him to the amount of money that we're discussing here will probably promise him second line right wing minutes.
Sure. It's what he's been playing for the Jets. Yeah. I mean, you know, the team.
If you think it's an incentive, you know, again, does he like playing here? It appears that he does. I don't know Michael Frolik personally, but it appears that he does. But do the players like it enough to give away their one big ticket? Because in reality, this is his one big contract. If he signs a 4 or 5 year deal, this is his one big contract. Like maybe he gets a second one, depending on the term of this one.
Yeah.
But if he's looking at his one big payday, and that's probably the way Alan Walsh is pitching it to him, will it come in Winnipeg? And remember, there's other factors here, Drew. The Jets aren't going to be a cap team. We mentioned the players that we were talking about before, the five guys up after next year, and two of them being UFAs, three of them being RFAs. The other factor here is a Canadian dollar. It's 80 cents. 80 per dollar here. So yeah. If you're looking at that, Jets aren't making the money they were making a year or two ago. Now, we don't know how much they banked in terms of American money. Maybe that isn't a factor. We don't know their books. But the idea is that could play into it as well.
Sure, revenues would be down, you know, in the sense that, right. You know, when you take in Canadian dollars and you pay out American dollars.
We don't know if they loaded up and bought
yeah, of course.
So many millions and billions of dollars. And
sure, and let's be honest, with the Jets, you know, they have some, you know, the pockets are decently deep.
Oh, they're so very deep, but the question is, but we're talking in respect of,
you know,
they're kind of, right now, they're not spending a ton of money on the team. Like, I mean, there's a couple of guys you could have brought in here to help that fourth line if you want to spend the money.
Right.
So they're going to stick to the budget is what I'm saying.
I agree with you there. I mean, you look at Frolik, and I mean, you know, he probably won't get to 20 goals this year because that would be above the pace he's on right now.
Mm-hmm.
But he's going to be in somewhere between 15 and 20. And, you know, like you say, it only takes one team. It only takes two teams to really drive this market price through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can the Jets afford to lose him for nothing?
Well, they don't have a choice right now. Because it's got to this point. You don't have a choice now. Can't trade him. So it doesn't matter if you can afford to lose them or not. You're going to lose them for nothing if you can't sign them. You can't trade them. That's the only problem. That's the main problem with waiting too long.
Sure.
You sign them, you don't. You trade them, or you don't. Because then you get a situation like this. We talked about this being a possibility. I mean, you take a risk.
Yeah.
You know what's going to happen.
You know.
Reality, you look at his stats, and it's going to be, you know, your 40 to 45 point guy.
Yeah.
Maybe high end 50, but I don't think so. So
I mean, his best season is his first in the NHL when he had 45 points in 79 games. And, you know,
his pace is pretty similar, Drew, to the past years in terms of what he's generating.
Yeah.
If you want to look at close, you know, percentages wise on shots and generating shots and things like that, pretty similar to last year. So you're looking at a pretty similar output as well. So, you know, the chemistry of these guys might be a little different. So the 40 to 50 range then.
Does your lack of depth on the right side factor into your decision making at all?
I mean, again, this is a complicated one, right? Does it factor in? Sure. Does the fact you have some youngsters in the system who eventually could help you? Sure. Does the fact that you have Bufflin, Trouba, and Bogosian on the back end and probably one needs to be traded? Could you fix that right wing hole there? Sure. Yeah. So again, that's why I say the upcoming, you know, 2 years here is going to be really telling in terms of Kevin Cheveldayoff and how he manages the team, because he's stood pat really for the most part here.
If you're Kevin Cheveldayoff in this negotiation, knowing what's coming down the pike in mm-hmm. terms of all the RFAs and the UFAs next year and everything else, you know, are you sort of maybe drawing a line? And like, if you pay Michael Frolik $4.5 million,
yeah,
you know, all your, you know, part of what you're doing is just bumping up what you're going to have to pay Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien and everybody else.
You're paying those guys more than that anyways, but yeah, it's true. And that also relates to other players in the team.
Sure. Yeah. Like, I mean, there is the, you know, other guys will come to you and say, well, you're paying him $4.5 million. He's getting you 47 points a year.
That's a realistic factor. I mean, every player's, I mean, Jaromir Kekäläinen said it on our show on Wednesday, GM of Columbus, every contract affects the next in the National Hockey League, no matter if he's on your team or not. But it has a bigger, plays a bigger factor if he's on your team.
Yeah, I mean, you pay Michael Frolik too much, or, you know, whatever too much is. All of a sudden, you know, Andrew Ladd might be a $6 million a year player.
I mean, he probably is anyway.
He probably is anyways, yeah, but yeah. You're right. I mean, just because the nature of the NHL beast, there's so few players that make it to free agency, and their value is inflated in the eyes of so many general managers as a result. And it's definitely an interesting situation for the Jets to be in right now, and one of those, you know, potential situations where Alan Walsh is holding on. Alan Walsh definitely, I think, has the upper hand right now when it comes to negotiations with Jets GM Kevin Cheveldayoff.
The player has the leverage now. That's how it works. That's how it works. Teams have the leverage earlier in the contracts, and the players have the leverage later on. That's how it works.
It'll be interesting to see how much they can use that leverage. Let's head to break. When we return, we're going to do a Jets over-under for the second half of the NHL season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show alongside Richard Pollock. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, and this segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, Kelly Taylor. The 7:15 p.m. show is sold out. Very few tickets remaining for the 10 p.m. show. I have it on reliable authority that the Columbus Blue Jackets enjoyed their time at Rumors on Tuesday night.
Oh, really?
As a whole bunch of them went out to Rumors on Tuesday to see Kelly Taylor.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's obviously he's a Prince Albert boy, and Scotty Hartnell ties to Prince Albert, so they obviously know each other from back in the day. And there was a number of Blue Jackets, I'm not 100% sure how many, but there was a good crowd of Columbus Blue Jackets in attendance to see Kelly Taylor Tuesday night at Rumors. Can't say for certain that explained their lousy performance on Wednesday, but, you know, maybe you want to make a correlation. I'm just saying.
Was Goalie Bob there?
No, I don't know if Goalie Bob was there. I'm not 100% sure who all was there, but I know that they were there, and they went out for a few after the show as well.
Did Jaromir Kekäläinen do the interview from Rumors?
No. Oh, that was on Tuesday's show as well. Maybe he was, yeah. I thought I heard some background noise. You know, anyways, check him out and the entire list of comedians at rumorscomedyclub.com. Spend a few minutes now, Mr. Pollock, going through some Winnipeg Jets over-unders for the second half of the NHL season. A little less than second half as the All-Star break comes at the 48-game mark for the Jets. So they have 34 games remaining. Currently, Richard, the Jets have 7 players with more than 10 goals. At the end of the season, over or under 5.5 Winnipeg Jets players having 20 or more goals?
Ooh. You know, you start off with the hard ones there, Drew. I'm going to say under. If so many here, I got to do short answers.
Okay. Under. Okay, yep. Fair enough. So you don't think that, you know, Vander Kane and I believe Michael Frolik both have 10 goals, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, Kane, just injury history-wise, and Frolik, I mean, he'll be close. I think he's going to fall just under. That's why I'm going under.
Okay, fair enough. It's a good start to the over-under here. We continue on with question two. The Jets are currently averaging 4.83 minor penalties per game. At the end of the season, over or under the Jets averaging 4 minor penalties per game?
Are you saying at the end of the season, so taking it down by 0.83 for the whole season?
Yeah.
No. They're going to be over that.
So they're not going to
become
more.
No, I mean, even if they take cut down on close to a penalty a game, a little bit, you know, half a penalty a game, I don't think they're going to be able to get below that. I think they're going to be more disciplined through the rest of the year, but not that disciplined.
They would, yeah. I mean, to get down below four or yeah. Penalties per game on average, they would probably have to drop it by about almost two penalties per game. So you don't see any. You don't see them. You see a minor improvement.
I see a minor improvement for sure. They're going to have to. They're going to have to be more disciplined, especially playing against these good teams here coming up. And again, you mentioned the schedule, but I'm talking St. Louis, Chicago. You have to play disciplined getting into the playoffs. And Paul Maurice is going to be going at these guys and saying, "Hey, we're going to be a playoff team here." He's going to talk that way. I bet we're going to be a playoff team here. We have to become more disciplined because in the playoffs, special teams is so important.
Andre Pavlik has started 10 more games than Michael Hutchinson. When the regular season ends, over or under Andre Pavlik having five more starts than Hutchinson?
Under. I'd be very surprised if Pavlik played any more games than Hutchinson. I assume Hutchinson will play more games down the stretch here.
So you expect Hutchinson will get the majority of the starts over Pavlik?
I don't even think the majority of it necessarily, but he'll get a few more for sure.
Okay. Michael Hutchinson, sticking with him, currently has a goals against average of 1.90. At the end of the season, over or under Hutchinson's goals against average being 2.1?
Under. Again, for him to allow, he's going to play more of the game, so it could fluctuate a little bit more because he hasn't played as many in the early part of the season as you might expect him to play down the stretch here. Even so, he's going to have to let in an awful lot of goals to get it all the way up over 2.10. I don't think he'll maintain the 1.9 pace, certainly, but I don't think it'll go all the way up over 2.1.
Evander Kane has...
Yeah.
Pardon me?
It's been very good.
Evander Kane has 10 goals in 33 games played for the Jets. The Jets have 34 games remaining. Over or under Evander Kane finishing the season with 20 goals?
This is a good question. And I think it plays into how long Matthew Perreault's out. If Matthew Perreault's out, I think he scores more. If Perreault comes back, I think he scores less. Perreault's injury, I don't know. We never know the details of the injuries here. I'm going to say he goes over.
So you think he improves his pace a little bit?
I do.
Are you also saying, conversely, is he staying healthy for the...
I'm going to say that he does. I mean, who knows, right? But I'm going to say that he does. Give a check. He's got to make a run here, and he talks a lot, so he's got to put up some stats here, and I think he's going to.
Well, and it seems like...
I think, actually, to be honest, I think the success of the team is partly related to the fact that he's been put into more of a third-line role and kind of just does his thing, plays the other team's third line and kind of plays that straight-ahead game. I think when he is in your top six for a prolonged period, I don't know if he makes his line mates better. But even so, I think he's going to score a bit. And if he's going to have more opportunity in the second line, then there you go.
Jim Slater, Chris Thorburn, Matt Halaschuk, TJ Gagliardi, and Anthony Peluso have combined for 10 goals this season. Over or under 8 total goals scored by those 5 players in the final 34 games?
I mean, it's an amazing stat. I'm going to say over, Drew, because Halaschuk's getting an opportunity to play a bit here, and I think he's going to pop a few. So I'm going to say over. That's not a high total, but I know it's based on what's happened for the early part of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Over. Although I don't know if there's going to be if Perreault comes back and they make a trade or two, I don't know if all those guys are going to get their chance, and I think that's probably plays a factor in your question.
It does.
Even so, I'm going to say Halaschuk gets an opportunity, and they pop more than 8 total. Yeah.
Brian Little has 18 goals scored in 48 games this season. His career high is 31 in 2008-2009. Over or under 31 goals for Brian Little at season's end?
That'd be a tad under. About 28-29. So I'm going to go under there.
Okay.
It's been great, though.
Yeah. Andrew Ladd has 17 goals scored in 48 games. His career high is 29 in 2010-11. Over or under 29 goals for Andrew Ladd at season's end?
I'm going to say Ladd hits 30. I'm going to go over on Ladd.
You think he keeps it going?
Yeah, a little more of a shooter. I mean, I know Little's been scoring on a lot of his shots there. I think that Ladd as the scorer, and I know Little's talked about getting that quick release off, but I'm going to go with Ladd getting the 30 there.
The Jets have 2 hat tricks this season. Over or under 1.5 additional hat tricks for the Jets this year?
Under. I mean, it took them 3.5 years to get one. I'm suddenly going to take 2 over the next 35 games. I'm not taking those odds.
Zach Bogosian has 13 points in 33 games. Over or under 13.5 points for Bogosian in the team's final 34 games?
I'm going to go under here just because the ice time is going to be a factor now, right?
Mm-hmm.
When he's playing, he's usually playing a lot. But with all these defensemen now, how often is he... Like, what's the lineman going to be on the power play? What's opportunity-wise? And I just think he's going to get a little less than that.
Mark Scheifele has 26 points in 48 games. Over or under 46 points for Scheifele at season's end, meaning over or under 20 points in the final 34 games?
That's a tough one. I think they're going to need him more down the stretch here. And I think I'm going to go under. I think it's going to get a little tougher down the stretch here, and he's a young player, so he's going to have a little bit of a learning curve. But he is forming nicely into that second-line center role. I'm going to go under, though.
Paul Postma has played 41 games for the Jets this season out of 48.
Yeah.
Paul Postma will play over or under 5 games for the Jets in the team's final 34. I changed the question.
Yeah, you changed the question.
I know. I changed the question on the fly.
5? It's assuming all those guys stay healthy.
They don't bring in any reinforcements on the back end, or he gets traded because there's talk about using him as trade bait.
Under 5.
Under 5.
Yeah, under 5, yeah.
Under 5.
He doesn't slot in anywhere.
Under 5 because he's in the press box, or under 5 because he's on another team?
Probably both. Yeah, both. I think that's a combination there. Pre-deadline and traded.
Ben Sherrod is averaging 19 minutes and 4 seconds time on ice in the 23 games he has played for the Jets this season. At season's end, Ben Sherrod will average over or under 18.5 minutes per game.
But under. Again, you know, ice time thing. You got other guys coming here now, and they're going to cut into that time, so it's going to be under.
Including Dustin Byfuglien's time as a forward, the Jets have employed 14 players in forward positions for at least one game. At season's end, the Jets will have used over or under 15.5 forwards.
Well, I'm basically talking trade there.
I'm talking trade there.
Yeah, you're talking trade. So they do acquire more than one player. I don't think they acquire more than one guy. So I'm going to say under. Yeah, one guy, though, I think is what they're going to go out and get. Second, I mean, depending on Perreault's injury there, but I think a third line right winger.
That seems to be the area that everybody's looking at right there. The Jets are currently, this is the final one, the Jets are currently 10th overall in the NHL. At season's end, the Jets will be over or under 11th overall in NHL standings.
Well, Drew, you were thinking, do they pass any of the teams ahead of them? It's going to be awfully tough, I think. Maybe a team like Pittsburgh fades off, but the Rangers are coming pretty hard. They've played 4 less games than the Jets, and they're only 2 games back. I don't know if Washington passes, maybe Boston makes a run. That's a really tough one. It looked like around 11 is probably where they're going to end up. So I'm going to push.
You're going to push.
You're going to end up 11.
I should have said 10 and a
half.
You're
going to end up 11.
You know what? You find the one question where I don't put a 0.5 on the end of it, and you use it as a cop-out. Anyways, that's it for the Jets over-under for the second half of the season. At some point, we'll look back and see how we did with our predictions. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Tom Lynn. Tom is the former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild. He's currently a principal and an agent with Veritas Hockey, and he wrote a book called How to Bake an NHL Franchise from Scratch, The First Era of the Minnesota Wild. We'll be joined by Tom next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.